universal form. Philosophically speaking, there are not so many points here which are of really like critical importance, or at least new points. It's more focusing on the rather spectacular phenomenon of the universal form. So we may go through it a little quickly and then go on to chapter 12, which is very short and is discussing devotional service. So, in chapter 10, at least in the second half of chapter 10, Krishna describes so many of his opulences within this material world. How he is manifest, or at least how his energy is manifest in many extraordinary ways. And when we see these different manifestations, which are so extraordinary, then that can help us to remember him and inspire us to relate those things to him. So now, in the beginning of chapter 11, in the first section, verse 1 to 9, Arjuna begins asking Krishna, if you would please show me the form, show me that form of yours in which all these different features that you've just now described, that they're manifest. I want to see that form as described in verse 3 of chapter 11. O greatest of all personalities, O supreme form, though I see you here before me in your actual position, as you have described yourself, I wish to see how you've entered into this cosmic manifestation. I want to see that form of yours. One interesting point that comes out here in this verse 3, and it'll become a little clearer as we go on, is that the two-armed form of Krishna is Krishna's actual form, or his real original form. Other forms, they're subordinate. Other forms, including this universal form which is about to be manifested before Arjuna, that is subordinate. And the four-armed forms and all the other forms, they're all subordinate to the two-armed form. So Arjuna expresses that in verse 3 by saying, Tvam Atmana, you yourself. That this is really you, it's you yourself, this two-armed form. But still, he wants to see this universal form, or the form in which all these wonderful opulences that Krishna has just described, the form in which those opulences are actually displayed. So, in verse 5, from verse 5 to verse 9, Krishna agrees, all right, if you really feel you want to see that form, then I'll reveal it to you. It's a very extraordinary form. In verse 6, Krishna says, no one's seen it before. Krishna, it's described in Mahabharata, how when Krishna went one time to Hastinapur, just before the battle of Kurukshetra, Krishna went to try and negotiate peace, a last-minute attempt to stop the battle. But Duryodhana and company, they were not really so interested. And one of the reasons that they weren't so interested was that they didn't really seriously accept that Krishna's God. They weren't convinced that he was God. So in order to try to convince them a bit more, which hopefully would lead them to the point of listening to him and doing what he was saying, giving some land to the Pandavas and avoiding the battle. In order to try and convince them, Krishna showed a sort of like a lesser version of the universal form, some partial type of universal form. He showed that to Duryodhana. And Duryodhana was amazed. He was quite astonished. Not quite to the same extent that Arjuna is, because it was a lesser form. It wasn't the complete universal form. But he was certainly very astonished. But still he didn't accept that Krishna's God. He said to Krishna, "Oh, that's very amazing. I wonder what austerities and pious activities you performed in your last life in order to get the mystic power to be able to show this form." So he took Krishna to be a jiva soul who had just acted very piously or something of that sort, and thereby he had got some great mystic power. So this particular universal form which Krishna is about to show, he says no one's seen it. In verse 7 he explains that everything is there, past, present, future. Everything, everywhere is present in the universal form in one place at one time. So it's quite something extraordinary. Then in verse 8, Krishna makes an interesting statement. He says that with these present eyes you have, you can't see this form. So I have to give you a different set of eyes. And he calls these eyes Divya Chakshus, which of course, well, Prabhupada describes, he translates as divine eyes. Generally we understand the term Divya to mean transcendental even. Now, one interesting question that arises in this chapter, or from this chapter at least, amongst so many people in Hinduism, is the question of whether the universal form of Krishna is a higher form than the two-armed or four-armed forms, or not. Those of you who are from Indian backgrounds, you may have heard people, generally the popular understanding is that the universal form is a higher form. And they say that one important evidence for that is that Arjuna couldn't see the universal form with his present eyes, but he needed these other eyes, these Divya Chakshus. Now, our acharyas don't accept that, and there's an explanation. And when we come to a suitable point, I'll explain it a bit. But it is an interesting question. It's definitely an interesting question. Divya Chakshus. Arjuna needed Divya Chakshus to see that form, whereas the two-armed form and also the four-armed form he could see with his own regular eyes. So then, starting in verse 9, the description of the universal form begins. It's in three sections. First of all, from verse 9 to verse 13, it's all explained there briefly in your overview book. 9 to 13 is Sanjay's vision of the universal form. Sanjay is quite impressed. He thinks it's very impressive, but quite nice. Then the second section is 14 to 19, in which Arjuna describes what he sees, or at least Arjuna begins to describe what he sees. And Arjuna is also very impressed, but he doesn't find it as nice as Sanjay found it. Sanjay finds it very colorful and spectacular. So Arjuna also finds it very spectacular, but he becomes a little, gets into anxiety because it's so vast, and he begins to become overwhelmed by seeing it. And then from verse 20 to verse 31, Arjuna sees, or he focuses on, one particular part of the universal form. Not the whole universal form, but one particular part, which is called the Kala Rupa, the form of time, which is part of the universal form. And when Arjuna focuses on this part of the universal form, then Arjuna becomes totally overwhelmed and bewildered, and it becomes too much for him, and he begs Krishna, please withdraw this form. So we'll just go quickly through these verses. So Sanjaya is describing from verse 9. He says in verses 10 and 11, it's very wondrous, brilliant, has celestial garlands and garments, divine scents, so it must have smelt very nice, divine weapons, celestial ornaments, very effulgent, verse 12, like hundreds of thousands of suns, very brilliant. Then 13 is now making a transition over to Arjuna expressing what he sees. So in verse 14, Sanjaya says that Arjuna, he actually was becoming bewildered by this extraordinary sight. He sees all the living beings, demigods, Lord Shiva, divine serpents, many arms, bellies, mouths, eyes, this is verse 16, no end, no middle, no beginning. Verse 17, he says, I'm finding it difficult to look at this universal form. Because of its effulgence, it's just too much. I'm seeing this form everywhere. I'm feeling totally surrounded by it. So he's explaining like this. In verse 19, blazing fire is coming out of the mouth, burning the whole universe. So a mood of apprehension and anxiety is definitely there. Different from the mood of Sanjaya. He thought it was very nice. It smelt very nice. Nice ornaments and clothing and so on. Then starting with verse 20, Arjuna sees the Kala Rupa, the form of time. Now that form of time, of course, is extremely frightening because that form of time is destroying everything. So Arjuna sees a lot of destruction going on. So he says in verse 20 that all the planetary systems are perturbed. They're frightened. So from being disturbed, now he's frightened. He sees, in verse 21, he sees lots of demigods, and they're very afraid. Then verse 22 is very interesting. He sees Shiva, the Adityas, these are all demigods, Sadhyas, Vishvadevas, these are all different types of demigods, the forefathers, the Gandharvas. Then he sees some Yakshas. Then he sees some Asuras, demons. So what are these people doing? They're looking at the universal form. Now, this brings us back to this point about Divya Chakshus, the type of eyes that Arjuna was given in order to see this form, and the question of whether those eyes were actually transcendental as such, or some other sort of special type of eyes. Different from normal human eyes, but still not necessarily transcendental. Well, what do any of you think? Any suggestions? Go about it. Yeah. Well, that's not exactly like a psychedelic eyes or something. That's not exactly the point, Drula.
Because the differences of the form of the thousands of suns are not quite
specialized. Yeah, that's not quite the point. The question is, did he get spiritual vision or was it something else?
Arjuna seeing Krishna, he already has spiritual vision. So Krishna is there, gets the Krishna. But he the form is the material form, so he gets heavenly eyes.
That's basically the right idea. I mean, the very there are a number of points which make it apparent, but the main point I would say is that Arjuna sees that there are a number of demons looking at this form. Now those demons, and even the demigods, particularly here, like Gandharvas, Vishvadevas, and so on, they're lesser demigods. They're not on the level of Brahma or Shiva. Yeah, so lesser demigods. Generally we understand that the demigods are not necessarily pure devotees. Actually, most of them are not. And many of them are definitely not, like the Gandharvas. They're heavenly beings, but they're not pure devotees. And now, obviously, the Asuras are not pure devotees. In fact, they're quite the opposite. They're demons. But they already have the vision which it takes to see the universal form, because they're seeing it. And Arjuna sees that they're seeing it, and he sees how they're reacting to that sight. So our acharyas, particularly Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, goes into this subject. And he makes the point that when Krishna said that I'm going to give you Divya Chakshus, that in this context, the term divya does not mean spiritual. Like so many Sanskrit words, divya has a primary meaning, which is spiritual, but then it has a number of secondary meanings. And one of those secondary meanings is celestial, or like on a higher level materially. So this Divya Chakshus then that Arjuna was given was a higher type of material vision, like a celestial material vision. And therefore he was able to perceive the universal form. But the other people on the battlefield, they weren't, because they didn't have that Divya Chakshus. But here we see that the demigods, asuras, and so on, they are seeing the universal. So, this is an important point to bear in mind. Anyway, as we go on, we're going from verse 23 now. Arjuna sees everyone's disturbed, all the demigods are disturbed. This terrible sight with terrible teeth, gaping mouths, his mind is becoming overwhelmed by fear. He can't even maintain his steadiness. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur makes the point that because Arjuna was a Kshatriya, at least he didn't run away and try and hide. At least he stood there and sort of went through the whole thing, even though he was beginning to collapse and he was just, hey, it was too much. At least he didn't try and run away or just completely loses mind. But definitely it was much more than he could take, and he was just losing his clarity of thought. 25 talks about the blazing death-like faces and awful teeth. And then in 26 and 27 he sees the scene on the battlefield. All the soldiers are running into the mouths of this particular feature of the universal form, and they're all getting chewed up. Very ghastly sight. Twenty-eight gives a somewhat poetic description of these warriors rushing into the mouths of the universal form and being chewed up. Like rivers running into the ocean. And then in 29, as moths fly into a fire. So our acharyas explain that rivers flowing into the ocean, this is a nicer type of concept. And this applies to the warriors like Bhishma, who are actually great devotees. But the moths flying into the fire and getting burnt up, it's rather ghastly. So that's describing how Arjuna sees Duryodhana and Dushasana and the demons being killed by the universal form. Then finally sees everyone is being devoured. It's like total destruction is going on. That's in verse 30, and then in 31 he asks Krishna two questions. Who are you? Who are you and what is your mission? What are you doing? So now we switch over to Krishna, starting with verse 32. So who is Krishna, or at least this, who is this particular feature of Krishna that Arjuna is seeing? Kalosmi, time I am, the destroyer of the worlds. And I've come here to destroy everyone. Prabhupada made the point that everyone should bow down before God. But an atheist is a person who will specifically refuse to. As a matter of principle, he'll refuse to bow down before God. But Prabhupada said that when God comes before this atheist in the Kala Rupa, in the form of time, then that atheist will immediately offer full dandavats before the Supreme Lord. Without any reservation, he'll just fall at the feet of the Kala Rupa. Everyone, there's no escape. There's a famous slogan. I don't know if any of you studied philosophy at university. There was a French philosopher called Sartre, Jean-Paul Sartre, who died a few years ago. And then he had a friend or someone connected with him called Nietzsche, who was German. And I think it was Sartre. Anyway, they were both very fond of the saying that God is dead. They thought God was dead. And they made, you know, a big thing about trying to explain philosophically how God was supposedly dead. So there's some famous graffiti in the subways of New York some years ago. Someone wrote, God in big letters, like right across the whole wall. God is dead, signed Nietzsche. Then a few years later, Nietzsche died, but the graffiti was still there. And then someone else came along and wrote underneath, Nietzsche is dead, signed God. So this is the time form, Kala Rupa. It devastates everything, including the whole material world, the planet that we're on, the whole universe. Everything gets destroyed by what? The Kala Rupa. So that this Kala Rupa is like the embodiment of everything horrible. Everything which is really unattractive is there in the form of time. So then, in verse 33, Krishna goes on to encourage Arjuna that don't worry, you should fight because you can see how powerful I am. And I've already arranged that you're going to win. So you just have to go through the motions of fighting and you'll come out successful. So don't worry about it. Just be my instrument and fight. And don't be so mental about the whole thing. Verse 34 says basically the same thing. All these great warriors that you're afraid of, or you're afraid that you're going to be responsible for killing or something like that, I've already killed them. So you're just going to be an instrument. You're not going to be responsible. Don't be disturbed. Just fight. Just do your duty and fight, and everything will work out fine. Then section D, Arjuna offers prayers from verse 35 to 36. First of all, from 35 to 40, Arjuna expresses his highly emotional state of mind. He's just astonished, completely overwhelmed. With a faltering voice, he's speaking, he's trembling. He's offering obeisances again and again, glorifying the Lord in all sorts of nice ways. Verse 39, he says, I offer my respectful obeisances to you 1,000 times, and again, and yet again. Then verse 40, obeisances from the front, from behind, and from all sides. So he's really offering obeisances. He's really, really offering his obeisances in quite a big way. Our acharyas explain that Krishna was thinking, Arjuna rather, was thinking that look at this universal form. It's so great, so I must offer something to Krishna to somehow appease him or placate him or something like that. I must offer something. But then he was looking around in the universal form and he saw that everything which I could offer is part of Krishna. So what can I offer to him? It's already part of him. So then he thought, well, the only thing I can offer then is my obeisances. So then from all sides, back, front, again and again and again, he was just offering his obeisances. It was just completely devastating for him. Completely devastating. Then from verse 41 to 46, Arjuna is expressing his own feelings, like his own heart. From 39 to 40, what is it? 35 to 40, he was glorifying Krishna. Now from 41 to 46, he's expressing his own attitudes and his own feelings. So first of all, in verses 41 and 42, he expresses that he apologizes. I was so familiar. I was saying, hey Krishna, hey Adana, hey Sakha. Oh Krishna, oh Yadava, oh my friend. But I didn't, and I thought you were just my friend, my cousin, but now I see what you really are. So I'm sorry I was so familiar with you. Our acharyas explain that when he says that I used to say, hey Krishna, then he didn't say Sri Krishna. He just said Krishna. Like if you go up to your spiritual master and say, just refer to him by name. You don't say Srila such and such. Then it's not so nice. So Arjuna's feeling like he's done that. Hey Krishna, you're my friend. So what he says, what I was thinking when I addressed you like that, is that you are Krishna, the son of Vasudev, and Vasudev is one of our ministers. So he's a lesser Kshatriya, which, strictly speaking, according to Varnashram, is true. Vasudev was in the position, according to Varnashram. He was a Kshatriya, but he was a lesser Kshatriya. He wasn't a king. He was a minister. So when I was calling you, oh Krishna, I was thinking that, oh, there's Krishna, the son of Vasudev, who's a lesser Kshatriya. So I'm sort of doing him a favor by being so nice to him. Hey Yadava, I was referring to you as a member of the Yadu dynasty, and the Yadu dynasty, they are lesser Kshatriyas, and they are beneath us. The Kauravas, they were ruling the whole planet, and the Yadus, they were kings in just one small portion over in Gujarat there. Just one small portion. So I was referring to you as being a member of that lesser Kshatriya family, as if you were less than me. And hey Sakha, oh my friend. I was thinking that even though you're in a lesser position, but still I'm being very nice to you by being friendly to you. So I'm very sorry for that. So he goes on like that. In verse 44, he expresses many different types of attitudes. He's feeling, he says, that you should forgive me or tolerate me as a son is tolerated by a father. as a friend is tolerated by a friend, or even as a husband is tolerated by his wife. So he's sort of manifesting different